welcome to episode 49 of Tech AU. My name is Jason Cartwright. I come to you from a very, very chilly Wodonga, Australia. But we've got some great tech news for you this week, and let's kick it off with the first story, that is the NBN HQ. The winner is Melbourne. That's right, Melbourne get the NBN HQ over other competitors, other bidding cities like Sydney. And basically it's going to be a four-story building containing up to 425 staff. It's going to be open before the end of the year, and it's going to house things like the Network Operations Center. So basically the control over the whole network, making sure things are working correctly, and a customer support type of division, which will handle the transition for existing customers from their ADSL connections over to the new fibre network. And so it sounds like end users may be calling the NBN Co HQ if they have issues, rather than typically their ISP. That's still to be worked out in the details, but there's also going to be a testing lab in the building. So if somebody wants to take put something online in the NBN, a new piece of infrastructure, they're going to come to the NBN HQ, they're going to test it in the lab, make sure it all works, and then deploy it on the network. So that's, as I said, due to be online before the end of the year. And it's said to be worth tens of millions of dollars for this building. But a big win for Victoria. On the same sort of note, NBN, the first customer, went online this week on the NBN. So there'd been some tests happening in Tasmania. The first part of the NBN rollout is down south in Tasmania. And now that it's basically nearing completion down there, they're starting to turn customers online. So these are fully paid customers, and Internode put out a press release this week which said they have the first customer online on the NBN. And this guy basically went from a 1.5 meg connection to a 50 meg connection, and is reportedly very, very happy with that. So the big question is, when can the rest of us have it? And as you know, the NBN is planned for a 7 to 8 year rollout, which is happening progressively, first in Tasmania, then into the mainland. And it looks like regional areas might fare pretty well in the rollout. Some indications that we might see it before a lot of capital cities around the nation. There are early tests in Melbourne happening already. So hopefully, for personally, Albury Wodonga, isn't too far away in the next year or so, a couple of years maybe. So those people have to wait to the end. That's got to suck. So we'll wait for a full roadmap. And this is also heavily dependent on what happens with the election later this year. So as you know, most of you will be aware now, we have the new female Prime Minister, Julia Gillard. So Labor is basically the big proponents of the NBN. The opposition have come out and said that if they get in power, then they're not going to go through with it. So to those customers who are already on the NBN by the time that happens, or if that happens, it'll be interesting to see how that rolls out and what happens for those customers. But I certainly love the NBN, and I can't wait for everybody to have really fast internet. It's going to make content producers like myself, like this show, it's going to make it all the much easier for us to get the content out in much higher quality. So, with that said, on to the second story, and that is the digital TV transition. Now, I'm sure most of you by now, especially the audience of the show, is going to have a digital TV. However, your mums, grandmas, grandpas, older people, still with their old, CRT, big old sets, probably don't. They may have a set-top box, maybe you've got one of those for you, but sooner or later they are going to switch off analog TV transmission. Now that has already begun in Mildura. They were the first area to be switched off and migrated completely over to digital. It seems that there's been very little reports of issues with this. It's sort of happened pretty quietly, and basically they're the first of many cities. Is going to be the transition is going to be completed by the end of 2013, and basically what they're doing is migrating all the regional areas and leaving the cities till last. So the capital cities won't move over until the end of 2013. obviously more people, and if something goes wrong, you're going to have more of a storm. So I guess Mildura and smaller areas, smaller regional areas are easier to do than city areas perhaps. So the reason we're migrating is basically to free up that spectrum of the analog TV broadcast. It's a good radio frequency. It gets through walls, can cover large distances, and so basically it's going to be repurposed into the 4G or next generation mobile networks. So you can understand telcos like Telstra and Optus and that are pretty keen to get hold of that. So the sooner we migrate over, and I actually think it's taking longer than it should have to migrate from analog to digital, I can't imagine there's that many, percentage-wise, that many people still left without even a set-top box. But if there is, you can get assistance from the government and they'll help you out. So basically, also when it's shut off after 2013, they can then boost the power of the digital signal. So it should mean further distances, so better reception, better quality broadcasts, that sort of thing. So that's all good news, and just basically a matter of time for it to roll out. There's a full timetable of the different areas that they're going to be rolling out to available online. There's a link in the show notes, and just be sure to look out for, you know, the show notes accompanying this episode. So, more new stuff. It's been a very good week in technology. A lot happening. A new Xbox 360 has arrived, the Xbox 360 Slim, or S as they're calling it. The branding, when you'll see in retail outlets or in catalogs, is just the new Xbox 360. They don't really call it Slim, but technically on the back it's got S, which people are sort of aligning with Slim. Could be smaller as well, I guess, and the unit's a little bit smaller. I've got one. I had a launch console of the Xbox 360, which meant it didn't have HDMI. It had a 20 gig hard drive, and so for me, the upgrade was a reasonable one. There's also the port in there for Kinect that'll launch later this year in November, and so that means you don't have to have an extra power brick. My experience with the new Xbox has been really, really good. They say it's whisper quiet, and they're not lying. You know, it is actually a lot quieter. My setup at the moment is I have a low-line unit and my older Xbox in there. I have a home server in there as well, and the thing I can hear now is the home server. The new Xbox 360, just for testing, is sitting on top of the... So it's not even in the unit behind the glass, and I basically can't hear it. So you're hearing the home server over the top of that. So to have a quiet media box like that to be able to watch movies and games and stuff on is awesome, because when you're watching a movie and you have a quiet scene and you've got that hum of whatever unit is displaying that video, used to be Xbox 360, the noisy one. It's pretty distracting and disturbing for your movie experience. So it's good to have that quietness. The CD-ROM drive is super fast, super responsive. So when you hit eject, it actually ejects instantly. The touch panel on the front for the power and for the eject button on the DVD drive makes a little tune when you turn it on or off. That was something I hadn't heard reported. But overall, very good experience. It looks nice, glossy black, pretty slick. 250 gig hard drive, and basically it's installing all my games now. It's something I wasn't able to do with a smaller 20 gig hard drive. Always had to go in there and delete demos and things like that. So even downloading movies from Zoom Video Marketplace, it's a lot more, you know, room for that sort of thing, for your game content. It's just better, you know, it really is just better. And I picked one up for $398. So you'll see around there are big variances in the prices. Some people have got it listed for $450. Don't pay $450 for it. Look around, you can get it for under $400. And if you're after a bargain, get in quick for the Xbox 360 Elites or the Pro consoles, because they're going away. And even the arcades, they're all really, really cheap. You can pick up an arcade for not much over $150, which is crazy when you think you could pick up two of those for the price of a Wii. Anyway, enough on that. iPhone 4 is launched in the US. They've had a lot of issues plaguing the antenna reception, all that sort of jazz. The latest from Apple is basically saying that they're going to issue a software fix that and that they've been reporting the antenna strength on all their iPhones since the first one incorrectly. So they're saying that it's not an issue with the hardware, that a software fix will accurately now represent the antenna strength, and that if you've been experiencing dropped calls, that it's likely because you're in a low reception area, but when you've been looking at your phone, you would have had 4 or 5 bars on there. In reality, you should have only had 1 or 2. So we'll wait and see until this fix is issued, but I suspect if it is hardware related and Apple is sort of trying to cover it up, that, you know, that's going to come out. People are still going to post their videos of their, you know, of their experiences and show that it either does or it doesn't fix the issue. So with that said, they have been selling like hotcakes. The latest report was 1.7 million. It's been a while since that number came out, so no doubt they're nearing the 2 million mark. And what that means for Australia, we were meant to get it this month. You know, that's still, you know, up in question at the moment. We haven't heard any plans from the carriers. There was a leak from basically 9 to 5 Mac had a leaked screenshot of Telstra's plans for the iPhone 4. They came out and denied it. But I've seen a few people who are unhappy with the prices, so maybe they looked at the... If it was real, maybe they looked at the public reaction, and maybe it wasn't too favourable, so they went back to the drawing board, said, no, they're not our official plans, and then they'll come out with their official ones later. Either way, we can when they do come out with plans, we'll compare it to these leaked ones and see how much different they were. But it basically was around 1 gig of data for $99 a month. Now I'm paying that. I'm paying $69 for a gig of data at the moment on Optus. And yes, there are, you know, issues on Optus networks in metro areas. Fortunately, I'm in regional area and it's not an issue for me. The new iPhone 4 is a big win for companies like Optus and Vodafone that have regional networks running on the 900 megahertz spectrum, so the 3G 900 megahertz. Basically, with the iPhone 4, it covers that spectrum. It includes the 900 megahertz running on 3G. So when you look at coverage maps, and they're not absolutely accurate, but when you look at the coverage maps for that spectrum, you basically got coverage across the state. So particularly in Victoria, that's just the area that I look at because that's where I live. Basically, that spectrum covers the entire state. So whereas Telstra had a big advantage with the existing 3G, 3GS models because you could only get 2G speeds on the 900 megahertz spectrum, Optus, Vodafone, the other carriers that run off those have basically with the iPhone 4 have an opportunity to catch up big time in that market in coverage. So it is annoying to drop back to 2G speeds when you're used to 3G or Wi-Fi speeds. So that's definitely a reason I'll be looking into getting an iPhone 4. Meant to be out here before the end of the month, but as I said, with the sales numbers over in the US and shortages, they may want to service the US market before they service Australia. But hopefully we do get it before the end of the month. Hopefully we hear about pre-orders very soon. And you know, the carriers start announcing their plans, because ultimately most people who upgrade to the 3GS are, you know, 12 months into their contract of a 24-month contract. We need to know what the out clause is or what the out penalty will be for ending a contract early. We got a discount last time for 3G customers upgrading to the 3GS. Hopefully the same is true this time, and a lot of customers can move over to the iPhone 4. More new stuff this week. There's a couple of online services. The new Hotmail has finally arrived for me. Do you have it yet? Not too many people do. There was a story from Mary J. Foley of ZDNet this week saying that only 1% of Hotmail customers had the new Hotmail. After rolling it out for quite some time, Microsoft seemed to be a little slow in rolling it out to all their 500 million customers. So understandably, you don't want to push it to everybody in day one, but definitely would have expected the time that's gone by since it was first announced. This was the announcement I went to Sydney for. I've seen all the new features of the new Hotmail and basically had to wait, you know, over a month to actually get hands-on with the new Hotmail. So what's included? Why do you care? Is it any good? That is the question. So First of all, it's got rules. So if you're familiar with Outlook rules, you can set up a bunch of parameters to say, if this message meets this criteria, is from this person, has these words in the subject or in the body of the email, has attachments, all those sorts of things, then direct it into this mail, you know, inbox or, you know, subfolder in your inbox. You can also do things like tag it, or you can even get SMS alerts about new emails that meet those criteria. So it's all, you know, that's a big, big win, and one of the key reasons people use Outlook over webmail or other mail clients. So I like the fact that you can get that functionality on the web now. That means that from any internet connection, you can manage your mail. Effectively, you know, you could always read your email for the longest time. You could read it on the web, sure, but to actually manage it, the other tool that helps you do that is Sweep. So you can bulk control email. So you just basically select, you know, all the email from this person, throw it into this folder, and then you can check a box to basically have that happen all the time. So that's almost like a side route to create a rule, is to always send mail from this person into this folder, that sort of thing. So Sweep is nice. You can delete items like that as well. There's filters, basically let you display mail from things like your social network. So if you've got invites or friend requests and things mailing you from Facebook or Windows Live and social networks like that, personally I turn all those off because I visit Facebook enough that if there's movement on there, then I'm gonna see it on Facebook just from visiting, rather than receive or fill up my inbox full of Facebook, you know, messages. So that's just how I work, but a good feature. What else is included in the new Hotmail? Active View. So this is kind of cool. If people send you images or YouTube links or, you know, videos online. And there's certain providers that are supported, but YouTube is definitely one of them, being the biggest video site on the web. So this, if somebody sends you an email with that content in, then you see the content in line. You don't just see, hey, there's four attachments. There's the images displayed in the body of the email, and then you can click on any of those or start a slideshow. And that's actually a really nice UI they've got happening there for that slideshow. Happens instantly, and it just, yeah, really makes for a good experience. The YouTube clip, you just hit play, it launches YouTube, goes to the video, and then you're right back to your experience. It launches in like a light box, so fades out the background, focuses on the content, watch the content, and then shut it down back to your mail. So that's a really nice, slick, sweet feature, I reckon. Active View. They've got integrated messenger. So typically you've got your desktop client for Windows Live Messenger. This moves that to the web. So as I said, if you're away from your computer, from your desktop, you're probably going to have Live Messenger set up if you're using Hotmail and the contacts there. But if you're away and you're on a public computer or friends or whatever, then being able to chat and have it integrated into your mail experience is a good idea. If you receive an email from somebody who's on your list, you're going to know, and you're going to be able to IM. You see they're online, you follow up and chat further about that item. So it's a good mix. Without merging the two contact lists, it's a good way of just controlling all that in an integrated experience. So they have to. I would say they have to be applauded for the changes there. A lot of tech folk are still very, very keen on Gmail, and they do support things like Exchange Push. Windows Live Hotmail is supposed to. I haven't tried it out yet, but it is also supposed to support Exchange Push of calendar contacts and email, like Gmail does, to smartphones like the iPhone. So in the coming week, I'll definitely try that out and get back to you and let you know how that goes. At the moment, I push all my email through Gmail and then to my phone, and that works. Works really well. If you're not doing it, you should. On to gaming now. Story number 5 this week is gaming. Now, we had E3's Expo a couple of weeks ago with all the big three, Microsoft, Nintendo, and Sony, announcing their lineup of new items for the next, you know, 6 to 12 months. So we got Kinect from Microsoft, which is a rebranding of Natal. We got Move from PlayStation 3, which is the Wii-style controllers with a little bit more accuracy. And the 3DS from Nintendo. And so, basically, the announcements, I just wanted to give you my thoughts on those three announcements. First of all, Kinect. You know, I've got the new 360 and I'm very keen to try out Kinect because it's actually brand new technology and it offers experiences that we haven't had before. And any company that can do that, it makes me really excited because I love my technology, but I love new things. People just basically repurposing things or making iterations don't really interest me that much. It's sort of a Me Too game, and I really feel that about the PlayStation Move. It doesn't excite me. I've got a Wii, a little bit more accuracy in that, you know, sure, there'll be HD graphics, but for me, I'll be getting Kinect on day one. For Move, I might get it eventually, but it's probably not going to be something I'll get into straight away. I might wait for other people to provide more feedback on it and see what they say. But based on my experience with Wii, is it's exciting for the first couple of weeks. You try it out and then you put it away and it basically collects dust. So yeah, the Move doesn't excite me. Onto the 3DS. It is impressive that they can get 3D technology into a handheld device. It's a little different 3D technology, another version of 3D that compared to the new 3D TVs that are coming out or the 3D in the theater. It's basically doesn't require glasses, and you can also turn it on or off using a slider on the side of the device. But the downside is that it does have very limited viewing angle. It's still a while away. It's going to be next year before we see the 3DS. So sort of a bit of all the hype can't really be capitalized on until the device ships and basically they get people's money from selling the device. So that won't happen till February, March next year. In other gaming news, I have to give a shout out to Red Dead Redemption. I've been playing it like a bandit lately. It is the new game from Rockstar, the people who made GTA 4, another game that I played for countless hours, and it's great, it really is, and it's killing it in sales. In the last month, it's topped the sales charts on the Xbox 360 and the PS3. It is the most downloaded, bought, played game. There was a patch that came out and added a little more content, so we're already seeing DLC for it. Hopefully more to come. But yeah, it's a big, big game, and you get your money's worth, that's for sure. So, having a lot of fun playing Red Dead. A lot of my friends have got it as well. There's multiplayer. But yeah, it's a very unique experience. Cowboy, sort of Western, you know, older times. You don't have cars, like modern-day cars. You got horse and cart. You don't have, you know, too many machine guns or modern weapons. You've got, you know, rifles and handguns and things like that, or even lassos. So it's, yeah, different experience, good game, something out of the ordinary. So if you haven't already, I highly recommend you check out Red Dead Redemption. On to the last story of the week, and that is basically just my summary of iPad apps. You know, I've had an iPad for a while since I got it in the US. Excuse me. So I've had a number of inquiries from people to say, look, I'm getting an iPad, or I'm interested in it. What are your apps? What do you think are the best apps on the iPad? So let me run you through it. In terms of RSS, which is something I read every single day, I've tried out a few, and there is NewsRack, which was my first favorite. Leo Laporte, when I was at Twit, gave me the heads up about NewsRack. It was the best. There is Reader, which is now in my dock at the bottom of my iPad. Reader is basically the go-to one now. Supports some great gestures just to flick around between articles and mark them as read and just all sorts of great stuff. Favorite them. I mean, it's a good, good app. So if you haven't already, get Reader. It's R-E-E-D-E-R. There's an iPhone version of that as well. Twitterific is basically a pretty good Twitter client for the iPad. But I also found this one called Usfara. Weird name, I know. O-S-F-E-E. O-S-F-O-O-R-A-H-D. Usfara. But weird name, great Twitter client. So definitely check it out. It just provides all the functionality that Twitter allows in one app. I mean, some apps give you partial functionality, but this is basically everything you could want. It's got lists, replies, messages, you know, DMs, favorites, nearby, like everything you'd want. So definitely check it out. That's Usfora HD. Next up is Epicurious. If you are at all into cooking, then your iPad's probably going to end up in the kitchen at some stage. And Epicurious is a free cooking app. And there's a bunch more now, like even Betty Crocker's got her her iPad app. But it just, with the iPad case, if you've got one that basically stands up the iPad, throw that on your kitchen bench, and you'll be cooking in no time. So you just follow down the recipe. But this particular one, Epicurious, allows you to mark recipes that you're going to make, throw them into a shopping list, and then either email that to yourself, or if you really can, you can take your iPad to the supermarket and check it off as you go. So, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll see shopping cart docs for your iPad in the future. Who knows? Pages and Keynote, I want to check those off just because they are basically the Office equivalent on the iPad. I use Pages most days at work. I'll take my iPad and use Pages to take notes in meetings. That works really well. Keynote, I just got a couple of days ago. Both of the apps are $12.99, but Keynote, I just discovered a bug before. I want to run the screen behind me on Keynote as a PowerPoint, and basically as a presentation, and worked out that using the VGA cable that it can't output in widescreen, which is sort of a pretty big downside, if you like. So your presentations are going to be 4:3, basically. Other than that, the control over inputting images and text and all that sort of content is very cool. I mean, they've got a lot of manipulation. It's all sort of touch-based, and obviously, being an iPad, it's touch-based. But just the way that you browse and insert images and new content, handle slides, and yeah, it's a great creating tool. And you know from Pages or Keynote, you can export. You just send. When you go send document, you got a number of output choices. So a typical workflow for me at work with Pages is to grab, basically take notes in a meeting, hit send to, I'll email it, and one of the choices is a Word document, which is great. So I'll email back to myself, jump on my computer, and I'm instantly back in editing that same document. So that's a good workflow for me. In terms of games on the device, there is Real Racing HD, fantastic 3D visuals, is definitely a showcase game. Pinball HD is another one. You can basically fire it up and hand it to somebody and they know what to do. You just tap left or right edges of the screen to handle your bumpers, and you're away and racing. It's really enjoyable. There's some nice solitaire games. I know solitaire is something we've played on Windows since Windows 3.11 or 95, whenever it first entered into Windows. But to just touch the cards, to touch and drag them, just makes sense. It's a really nice experience. Tap-Tap Radiation is a standout one. You've probably played Tap-Tap Revenge on the iPhone. It's basically just staying in time with the music and touching the screen. But to have that 9.7-inch screen to play on, it really makes for a good experience. And there's some good songs on there, really. And instant messaging is another item that I do every single day. And whether it's on my desktop or whether it's mobile or, you know, on the iPad, the client that I'm using on the iPad, my favorite so far, is IM Plus. I've played around with both that and Beehive IM, which are probably two of the most expensive IM clients. But IM Plus seems to be my favorite on the iPad, which is interesting because I actually prefer Beehive IM on the iPhone. Anyways, they are my recommendations. IMDb, Dictionary, both good apps. There's Amazon. I mean, the list just keeps going on and on of great apps on the iPad. I'm really happy I got it. Not much more I can say, other than if you don't have one, you should seriously think about it or get hands-on with one, and you'll probably fall in love with it and get one. So that's basically it for this episode. I've had a good time, and the next one is episode 50. That's huge. So I know this has taken a while to get out, and I've been a bit slack getting episodes of the podcast out. It is, believe it or not, it is a lot of production to produce an episode, and that's why I don't do one every single week. Life kind of gets in the way sometimes, but episode 50, I think I'll definitely have a hard think about something special for episode 50. And I'll see you then. So, bye.